Chapter 6. The First Month. 2. I had a little money when I entered the prison. I carried only very little on me for fear it should be taken away, but as a last resource, I had several rubles hidden in the binding of a New Testament, a book which one is allowed to have in prison. This book, together with the money hidden in the binding, was given to me in Tobolsk by men who were exiles too, who could reckon their years of banishment by decades and had long been accustomed to look at every unfortunate as a brother. There are in Siberia, and practically always have been, some people who seem to make it the object of their lives to look after the unfortunate, to show pure and disinterested sympathy and compassion for them, as though they were their own children. I must briefly mention here one encounter I had. In the town where our prison was, there lived a lady, a widow called Nastasha Ivanovna. Of course, none of us could make her acquaintance while we were in prison. She seemed to devote her life to the relief of convicts, but was especially active in helping us. Whether it was that she had had some similar trouble in her family, or that someone particularly near and dear to her had suffered for a similar offence, anyway, she seemed to consider it a particular happiness to do all that she could for us. She could not do much, of course. She was poor. But we in prison felt that out there, beyond the prison walls, we had a devoted friend. She often sent us news of which we were in great need. When I left prison and was on my way to another town, I went to see her and made her acquaintance. She lived on the outskirts of the town in the house of a near relation. She was neither old nor young, neither good-looking nor plain. It was impossible to tell even whether she was intelligent or educated. All that one could see in her was an infinite kindliness, an irresistible desire to please one, to comfort one, to do something nice for one. All that could be read in her kind, gentle eyes. Together with a comrade who had been in prison with me, I spent almost a whole evening in her company. She was eager to anticipate our wishes, laughed when we laughed, was in haste to agree with anything we said, and was all anxiety to regale us with all she had to offer. Tea was served with savouries and sweetmeats, and it seemed that if she had had thousands, she would have been delighted simply because she could do more for us and for our comrades in prison. When we said goodbye, she brought out a cigarette case as a keepsake for each of us. She had made these cigarette cases of cardboard for us, and how they were put together, and had covered them with coloured paper, such as is used for covering arithmetic books for children in schools, and possibly some such schoolbook had been sacrificed for the covering. Both the cigarette cases were adorned with an edging of gilt paper, which she had bought perhaps expressly for them.
"I see you smoke cigarettes, so perhaps it may be of use to you," she said, as it were apologizing timidly for her present.
Some people maintain, I have heard it and read it, that the purest love for one's neighbour is, at the same time, the greatest egoism. What egoism there could be in this case, I can't understand. Though I did not have much money when I came into prison, I could not be seriously vexed with those of the convicts who, in my very first hours in prison, after deceiving me once, came a second, a third, and even a fifth time to borrow from me. But I will candidly confess one thing. It did annoy me that all these people with their naive cunning must, as I thought, be laughing at me and thinking of me as a simpleton and a fool just because I gave them money the fifth time of asking. They must have thought that I was taken in by their wiles and cunning, while if I had refused them and driven them away, I am convinced they would have respected me a great deal more. But, annoying as it was, I could not refuse. I was annoyed because I was seriously and anxiously considering during those first days what sort of position I could make for myself in the prison, or rather, on what sort of footing I ought to be with them. I felt, and thoroughly realized, that the surroundings were completely new to me, that I was quite in the dark, and could not go on living so for several years. I had to prepare myself. I made up my mind, of course, that above all I must act straightforwardly, in accordance with my inner feelings and conscience. But I knew, too, that that was a mere aphorism, and that the most unexpected difficulties lay before me in practice. And so, In spite of all the petty details of settling into the prison which I have mentioned already, and into which I was led chiefly by Akim Akimich, and although they served as some distraction, I was more and more tormented by a terrible devouring melancholy. A dead house, I thought to myself sometimes, standing on the steps of the prison at twilight and looking at the convicts who had come back from work and were idly loafing about the prison yard and moving from the prison to the kitchen and back again. I looked intently at them and tried to conjecture from their faces and movements what sort of men they were and what were their characters. They sauntered about before me with scowling brows or over-jubilant faces. These two extremes are most frequently met with and are almost typical of prison life, swearing or simply talking together or walking alone with quiet, even steps, seemingly lost in thought, some with a weary, apathetic air, others, even here, with a look of conceited superiority, with caps on one side, their coats flung over their shoulders, with a sly, insolent stare and an impudent jeer. This is my sphere, my world now, I thought, with which I must live now whether I want to or not. I tried to find out about them by questioning Akim Akimich, with whom I liked to have tea so as not to be alone. By the way, tea was almost all I could take at first. Akim Akimich did not decline tea, and used to prepare our absurd homemade little tin samovar, which M had lent me himself. Akim Akimich usually drank one glass. He had glasses, too. Drank it silently and sedately. Returning it to me, thanked me, and at once began working at my quilt. But what I wanted to find out, he could not tell me. He could not, in fact, understand why I was interested in the characters of the convicts surrounding us, and listened to me with a sort of sly smile, which I very well remember. Yes, evidently I must find out by experience, and not ask questions, I thought. On the fourth day, early in the morning, all the convicts were drawn up in two rows at the prison gates before the guardhouse, just as they had been that time when I had my fetters changed. Soldiers with loaded rifles and fixed bayonets stood opposite them, in front and behind. A soldier has the right to fire at a convict if the latter attempts to escape. At the same time, he would have to answer for firing, except in extreme necessity. The same rule applies in case of open mutiny among the convicts. But who would dream of attempting to escape openly? An officer of engineers, a foreman, and also the non-commissioned officers and soldiers who superintend the works were present. The roll was called. Those of the convicts who worked in the tailoring room set off first of all. The engineering officers had nothing to do with them. They worked only for the prison and made all the prison clothes. Then the contingent for the workshops started, followed by those who did unskilled work, of whom there were about 20. I set off with them.